The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage can be found on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And as always, my sidekick and producer today is Tom Schreier at TSchreier3. Tom, what's going on?
Not too much. Exciting day.
Yeah. Twins coming off an off day, taking 3 out of 4 from the Angels in Los Angeles or Anaheim, whichever you prefer. And they will continue the West Coast swing this evening as they take on the Seattle Mariners, 28-30. Coming into this matchup, it will be Hector Santiago against James Paxton. 9-10 first pitch here, 7-10 first pitch locally. And speaking of, we are going to bring in our guests on Skype from Lookout Landing. We have Jake Mailhot at Jake, M-A-I-L-H-O-T on Twitter. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. I can't speak for Tom, though.
I'm doing well.
And then we've got Kate Prusser at, and this is going to get difficult here, once again, 2Zelda on Twitter. That's a 1NCE, again, 2, the number 2, Zelda. What in the world is that all about, Kate? That's amazing.
It's not actually a reference to the video game. It's the inscription to the Great Gatsby, and it's sort of a callback to my English literature major nerd when I first set up Twitter before I was a baseball writer. So
one of us, right? Big Gatsby.
Yeah. Sounds great, old sport.
One of us.
Oh, I love that.
Exactly.
I love that book in high school. And I liked the movie. I think it was kind of a polarizing movie. I don't think a lot of people loved it, but I thought it was pretty good.
It was a spectacle. It was beautiful to look at.
That's about as diplomatic as you can be. So, you guys are both with Lookout Landing. I want to ask you, Jake, first, what your role is with the site, and then Kate, if you want to follow up. What do you guys do for Lookout Landing? Obviously, the SB Nation, blog. One of the more popular team blogs, I think, as far as SB Nation is concerned. Named after the part of the stadium where it looks out over the bay, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. So for Lookout Landing, I'm a staff writer. I do all of our series previews during the year. So I just posted one this morning for this upcoming series against the Twins.
I'll retweet that right now so people can check it out. I guess they're not listening live, so what the heck. But I'll retweet it so people can check it out. They can check my timeline and see it.
Nice.
But cool. So series previews. What else do you got going on?
I've sort of turned into our resident mediocre pitcher analyst. So we've gone through about 10 deep in our starting rotation. And I've sort of turned into the guy who tries to make everyone feel good about these guys that they're calling up from AAA.
So you can tell me more about Christian Bergman when the time comes.
I can, yeah.
Perfect. Kate, how about you?
In fact, he is the Christian Bergman pitcher whisperer.
So you're a mediocre pitcher enthusiast. If Twinkie Town is ever looking, the Twins site could probably use you for that respect too.
There we go.
How about you, Kate? What is your specialty? I know we saw you on Fangraphs doing the residency program, which is for the most part a pretty cool program to get writers more exposure. And you obviously do great work. What keeps you busy on Lookout Landing?
Oh, thank you. Well, I manage the site, so
that's kind of a big deal.
It's all level of stuff. So just from the administrative side to the writing side to keeping the overlords at SB Nation happy and making sure we have content to fill the day. So it's much more of an administrative role, as you know, the term manager might suggest.
Does it allow you to scratch your creative your creative? What's the word I'm looking for here?
Yeah, not as much, yeah. Which is...
You're a creative itch, I guess.
Yeah, I don't quite have the luxury of, like, spending 2 days working on something that is, you know, a piece that is an art piece as much as I would like, because, you know, there's stuff going on, and we've had so many roster moves this year. I'm on freaking Baseball Reference all the time looking up Tyler Cloyd. What's a Tyler Cloyd?
No, I think Philly fans could fill you in on that one.
Yeah. Well, he is one of the more recognizable ones. We have dudes from, like, Indy Ball that they went and rescued that are just so happy to be, like, getting a hot meal.
Also, Casey Fien. Lots of Casey Fien, who we're familiar with here.
Oh, yeah. That was...
I'm so sorry.
Jake, what do you want to say about Casey Fien?
Here's the thing about Casey Fien.
Keep it PG-13, please.
I'm so glad he's not on the 40-man roster anymore. There's no way he's going to make it back into the majors this year, I don't think. And that's a good thing.
He was rough. He was real rough.
So as far as background, Kate, you kind of teased what yours is, but as far as education or as far as what interests you maybe outside the game or how you got into the game, what would you say your path looked like?
It's probably not the most traditional in that I had moved away to Philly for about 10 years. And while I was there, I really couldn't follow the Mariners very closely at all, although I'd grown up a huge baseball fan. But they were really difficult to follow in Philly, and they were difficult to follow without, like, an expensive sports package. And mm-hmm. I sort of just followed the Seahawks because that was easy to do once a week and go down to the bar and get heckled recklessly by Philadelphia fans who are just as kind and supportive as you've heard.
They throw snowballs at you in the dead of or the middle of summer, and you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So when I moved back to Seattle, I kind of just got into, like, Mariners Twitter, and it was a really great community. And, you know, it is super hard to make friends when you are an adult and you don't have school anymore. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had all these friends in Seattle, but it turns out when you've been gone for, like, a decade, it is a lot of those people have left too. So it really, like, gave me a space to start making a community of people who cared about the same kinds of things that I care about and are nerdy and weird in the same way that I'm nerdy and weird. And so it just kind of blossomed from there.
Mariners Twitter sounds like a lot of fun. Patrick Dubuque is kind of the one that I followed, I think, the longest. But it seems like a pretty smart community, if a bit of a self-loathing community. And I can kind of see where all that comes from. The Twins community is kind of frustrating in that they've been bad for long enough that literally everything that happens is a debacle. Literally, Joe Mauer sits against a tough lefty, like maybe James Paxton tonight, and it will be literally, can't believe he's making $23 million and sitting against this guy. And it's like, okay, well, Joe Mauer plays better with time off. He's not good against lefties anymore. And seriously, he's playing very well right now. Like, what more do you want? What are kind of the intricacies of Mariners Twitter that that maybe we don't see from the outside?
I mean, I would definitely say that we have that. You should see the Lookout Landing mentions after, like, Kyle Seager's start to the year. they were, and, you know, you can't tell people, like, this is kind of his deal. He gets off to a slow start every year. Yes, it is exceptionally bad this year, but here are his hard hit numbers. Here are his soft hit numbers. You can see he's putting up basically all his peripherals are in line. This is just some really weird Babbitt luck. But people just want to yell, you know? And of course they want to yell. The team's been horrible forever. Mm-hmm. So, and this was supposed to be our shot. And, you know, it's been kind of a rough season. It's been a really rough season. So, yeah, I mean, I understand that. You're seeing, like, the best, a lot of times the best voices rise to the top, and Patrick especially, to name him.
He's very eloquent.
Yeah, whenever I start to feel too good about myself, I go read something that Patrick has written and just, like, oh, yeah.
You got to hit those dumb fans with the SpongeBob meme with a Mariners hat on it. That's what I've been doing with Twins fans lately.
Yeah, that's, you know, I can usually, now at the point of where I can tell by someone's avatar whether or not I'm going to be interested in what they have to say to me.
Oh, yeah. Or how their name is written if it's, you know, got a certain emoji in it. You're like, nope, we're going to be done here.
Yeah, exactly. But Jake precedes me in the community, so he might have a more nuanced take.
So Jake, I want to ask first of all your background, like I asked Kate, because I did see you are in, is it marketing or am I missing?
Yeah. So actually, I've got a really interesting background, like Kate too. I went to school to become a teacher. I have a master's in teaching, but I am not teaching. I'm working for a publishing company, doing marketing for them. If you think about it, the concepts are the same. You're communicating information to a diverse population, and so I think a lot of the skills that I learned when I was becoming a teacher translated really well. And those same ideas translated well to baseball writing too. You're communicating ideas and distilling all this information into something that can be understood by a very diverse audience. So I think that's really helped me becoming a good writer, or at least I think I'm a good writer. I don't know.
Well, I know, and I have that internal battle all the time. So what's your take on Mariners Twitter? What might Kate have missed, or when you were there before her? Maybe you have a little bit different view on it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, with the success of the Seahawks recently, I think there's a lot of crossover fans that are just are sort of riding this wave of success with the Seahawks, and they're looking for that same type of success with the Mariners, and they're reading all these pieces in the offseason, basically saying like, oh, this is the Mariners' shot. This we've built the best team we've had in years, and we're going to go to the playoffs this year, and all the odds are in our favor. And then to see the team sort of really, really struggle out of the gate and then deal with all of these injuries, you're just getting all of this like crazy backlash from all these sort of fair weather fans that, I don't know, just had incredible expectations out of the gate. And so it's just hard to like wean your way through. So like these crossover fans with like the true Mariner fans who really understand like baseball season's 162 games long, and yeah, we're still in the middle of June or at the beginning of June. And so there's still like 4 months left in the season. So it's a really weird mix.
Well, the toughest part too that I've found is the football fan mentality to the baseball game just is not a perfect mix. Twitter is already a bad enough marriage for baseball in that one bad pitch and they're like, yep, get this guy out of there. You know, Giovanni Gallardo gives up a home run or something. Maybe I touched a nerve there. But it's the same deal here with Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson gives up two runs in the first, and people just lose their minds about Kyle Gibson pitching poorly. He goes on to give him five innings of two-run ball, and it's like, well, hey, wait, that wasn't that bad. It's like, well, then why were we so wound up about the first inning? It's just so wild how people are so programmed into this idea that that everything happening in the moment needs to be worth our outrage. And it's just like, I don't have the energy for that.
Yeah, just so reactionary. Just like every little thing becomes this big thing. And then, when you take a long look at everything, it's just like, oh, okay, well, that wasn't so bad. But so why did we have to spend all that energy whining about all these things?
Yeah. Kate, you did pitch talks last night. First of all, we talked about it off the air. It sounds like a pretty fun time. How organized is it? Is it just kind of baseball people riffing and taking questions, or what is it like? Because I hope someday they have one in Minnesota. Not that I'd necessarily be invited on the stage, but even to just go check it out would be kind of cool. But what's it like?
Oh, well, you should totally get Kevin Kennedy or just at the pitch talk thing. You know, if you can build sort of a groundswell of support and prove that people would be interested in it. I thought it went really well. They had a few of us. So me, Meg Rowley, Patrick Dubuque, and Jeff Sullivan, who is the initial founder of LL and is at Fangraphs now. We were the first panel, so we kind of did, I think we were supposed to do like maybe a more of a stats focus thing, but really just kind of came out because we were first. It was like the state of the team, which, you know, is a little grim as far as how they've performed this year and what kind of contracts they have on the books, and arguing about, do we blow it all up or do we hang in there? So sort of that's like the big question facing Mariners fandom. So we got that to start with, which was, I was expecting maybe something a little bit of an easier on-ramp, but that was intense. And then they had another panel, another set of panelists, with Kyle Boddy, who is driveline pitching, the head dude there.
Lots of science with him.
Yeah. And all of this was hosted by, I'm sorry, I should have said this first. It was all hosted by Mike Salk, who is a radio host here in Seattle. And he was sort of acting as the MC. He was prompting the questions, kind of riffing off what people had said to further the conversation. So he was facilitating it, and then we had the audience questions. But the panel that really kind of brought the house down was the beat writers. So Dave Cameron, again from Fangraphs, and then the two beat writers, Shannon Dreyer, who worked for the ESPN station here, and then Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times. And they had and by that point, everyone was well in their cups.
Well said.
And they were no holds barred, giving us the down and dirty on some of the former players, who was good, who was an ass, that. it was really, really cool. Robinson Cano loves baseball. That was the coolest thing for me to find out, is Robinson Cano, sometimes he gets people say, he's lazy, he's phoning it in, he doesn't see the... No, he loves baseball, and they called him a baseball nerd, which I don't think I've ever heard the word Robinson Cano and nerd in the same... it doesn't seem like those belong in the same sentence.
Yeah, I love to hear those kind of things from players. I think Miguel Sano has a similar personality, to the point where fans might think he's something he's not, but I read something that called him a hitting savant, which is actually a good point. He seems to be a student of the game. He is a little goofy, but he's a young guy, and 23-year-olds are goofy. I know when I was 23, I wasn't terribly bright, and I did make some goofy decisions. So,
I would posit most major league pitchers or players who are in their early 20s are way less goofy than any of us were in our early 20s.
I think it's the life regiment, though. The regiment, as far as the structure of it, doesn't allow for that much leeway, which might make the time off a little bit more prone to, doing things that end up in the news. Keeping in mind, too, they're public people, so they're going to, if they get arrested or something, it's going to hit the news. But yeah, the structure of their lives doesn't allow them to do as many wild things, I think, as people might expect them to.
Yeah, baseball is a grind. Mm-hmm. In season, you are not going to hear out of most of them because they spend their off days. I think a lot of them just want to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of nice pictures from the various Mariners on their off days yesterday, because Seattle's a beautiful city, obviously, and I think a lot of them have fun exploring it. So it's always fun to see the social media posts of the players out, kind of being tourists in the city.
It is a weird dynamic, though, to be a tourist in the city whose name you wear on your chest 162 days a year, but play in 81 days a year. Isn't that kind of weird?
Oh, yeah. And I think, it's so, it's not very permanent, the baseball life, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
You have some guys who get signed to nice long contracts, but the majority of guys get shuffled around, and I know Logan Morrison really misses Seattle, and his wife misses Seattle.
Well, the way he's playing, you guys probably miss him right now, too.
Danny Valencia has turned it up a little. I don't know, Jake, what do you think? Do you miss do you miss Log Dog?
I do. I kind of do miss Log Dog. Just he had a great personality. he was kind of this weirdo that loved baseball, and the year that he's having this year is really great. I do like Danny Valencia. He's sort of one of those guys that has bounced around the league so much, but he's taken Seattle in as sort of a home, and he's really he's endeared himself to the community, both the Mariner community and then the greater Seattle community. There was a picture of him a week ago wearing a Sonics cap, and I mean just that alone, he's going to win so many more fans just by wearing that hat. And I think he's, performance wise, he's been a pretty good first baseman for us. He hasn't blown the world away. He got off to a pretty slow start, but he's really turned it on in May and continued that in June.
Well, good, because I know that the vibe for why he bounced around was he was a little bit of a lightning rod in clubhouses, both things I saw and things I heard. So That's good. You know, he's getting to an age now, his age 32 season, where he probably does want to get some stability, and hopefully he can find that in Seattle moving forward. Before we dive into specifics on this upcoming series, I did want to find out how each of you got your starts in baseball writing. You know, not everybody gets to write for Fangraphs or Baseball Prospectus at all, let alone to start their careers. So how did you guys get started, and what have been the processes to get you to where you are today? Let's start with Jake.
Yeah, so I played baseball in high school, and I loved it. My dad is my coach, and I learned a lot from him. But then I kind of stopped playing in college, and I was never really much of a writer. I went to school for teaching, and so I was writing lesson plans, which isn't really like writing an analytical article. I found that I really did enjoy writing. So I started my own blog, a personal blog, and I wrote a bunch of weird stuff on there. And I started writing about the Mariners there too. Back in the mid-season of 2014, Lookout Landing posted an open call for writers, and I sent in some of my stuff that I'd been writing on my personal blog, and got a gig, and I've been writing there ever since. I'm coming up on 3 years writing for Lookout Landing now, and I feel like it's taken me that long to sort of get the hang of how to write well, and how to write in a way that tells a story about all this data that you're working through, that you're synthesizing. I feel like in the last couple of months, really back to the beginning of this last offseason, I've really come into sort of a groove in writing, which has been really nice.
So like in terms of finding your voice, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're writing about baseball statistics in particular, it can be so dry because you're just working mm-hmm. through all these different numbers, and you're trying to analyze these numbers based on, and you're trying to create like a narrative out of these statistics. And for a lot of people, it's really hard to make that really interesting. And so I feel like, in the last couple of months, I've really found that voice to give a narrative and a story to the data that I'm analyzing, and bring it into a level where your average fan who maybe isn't familiar with all of these different statistics would be able to understand what's going on with a particular player.
Yeah, I've found that the stats can tell a story, but it might be one that nobody wants to read because it's just so dry. So you do kind of have to fluff it up without going over the top. And I feel like a lot of the fantasy baseball writing I see too gets a little too jargony. So it is a very narrow line that you have to walk. Kate, how about you as far as your path to where you got today?
Similarly to Jake, I have a degree in teaching and spent a long time not writing because I was teaching, which sucks a lot of your time away.
I thought you were going somewhere else with that, like your will to live or your...
Yeah, I just watched Breaking Bad last year, which was so good. I'm so bummed I missed it when it was on, but I literally had no time to
watch
it.
Pretty gripping stuff, though. I only watched the first couple episodes, and we stopped watching. It just was too jarring for my wife at that time, and I'm like, oh, well, we'll wait. I don't remember if she was pregnant at the time or not, but I'm like, we'll just back off and watch it again later, but holy smokes, what a gripping show.
Yeah, I'm just super sad. I was like watching it, and I really, but I missed the cultural zeitgeist on it because mm-hmm. I was.
You're like,
you know,
hey guys, want to talk about a show that was on 3 years ago? And everyone's like, who's this weirdo? I don't.
Yeah,
let's talk about.
Exactly. I mean, if anyone is ever down to talk Breaking Bad, like I have laid it, I've mapped it all out against Macbeth.
Oh wow!
And yeah, I have such a good article that no one cares to read, right?
You got to start a blog called Pop Culture 3 years later, because I've been thinking about reviewing albums that I listen to after the fact. So if anybody wants to hear about what I think about Nas 10 years after, we can talk about that. But obviously, if nobody's buying, I shouldn't be selling. Anyway, I'm interrupting you.
And of course, the irony is now I'm right back into that space where... again, I'm kind of failing at pop culture and keeping up with pop culture because all I'm doing right now is baseball because I'm trained as a writer. I have an MFA in creative writing. So I didn't have far to go on the writing side of things mm-hmm. or the narrative side of things. But I had and still have a long way to go on the baseball side, and specifically working with the advanced stats, because I'm also not a great math person. So, like Jake said, just trying to find a voice that is faithful to the numbers and tells the story of the numbers, but also tells the story in a compelling way and in an accessible way. And that's something that I think I try to work on every day. The best thing about running a baseball blog is that it forces you to write. I write pretty much every day. And even when I was in an MFA program, I don't think I was writing every day. So it's been good to just, sometimes I have a tendency to over-polish or over-analyze, and when I had more time to work on pieces, you know, they'd get stopped because I'd just be like, oh, it's not perfect yet. And so just having to, like, it's like exercise, like just having to go in and put in a few reps every day, I get better and better for it.
What would you guys say this season's Mariners team has been, like a Shakespearean tragedy, or as far as I don't want to mangle this. I don't want to mix the metaphor, but holy smokes, I'm looking at the disabled listing on Baseball Reference, and you've got basically three-fifths of a rotation here, a pretty good bullpen, two everyday players, and some spare parts as well.
Not just everyday players,
guys, all caps, guys.
All-star shortstop and an outfielder who is on his way to a Rookie of the Year campaign.
How sustainable do you guys feel Mitch Haniger's start was? I mean, obviously, slugging 600, maybe not so much, but obviously off to a great start, and it was walks, it was power. I don't know how he is defensively, so you'll have to fill me in on that. But as far as a quick start, I mean, he had captivated a lot of people through those first 21 games.
Yeah, I think with Mitch Haniger, we go back to last year when in his call-up with the Diamondbacks, and he was one of these guys that, like Jake Lamb, sort of retooled his swing to get more lift on the ball. And I think we're seeing that the outworking of that that swing change this year, just in his power numbers. I mean, he's it was a really short sample, but he was just crushing the ball, and his exit velocity and launch angle matched up really well with when he was what the results were showing on the field. And even more impressive was his plate discipline. He was he wasn't swinging at pitches out of the zone. He was choosing the right pitches to swing at in the zone. And when he was swinging, he was just making really hard contact. So I think he's for real. I think those that plate discipline that he's showed is bigger than the swing changes, right? Because the hardest part for a new player in the league is adjusting to the major league pitching. And so if he's showing good plate discipline that young, then I think he's got a really bright future ahead of him.
Kate, is there anything you can add to that to fill in the gaps? Because obviously, you know, very good player, young guy, very exciting. I think the Mariners will be a lot better once he gets back, which sounds like it's going to be soon.
I'm doing my best to do justice to our staff writer, John Troopin, right now, as I'm sure Jake just was. John has been kind of on the Mitch hand wagon. Yeah, the Mitch Haniger bandwagon.
That sounds like weird phrasing. That's a little corny. that is kind of a fun way to say it, though.
He has been the driver of that hype train since spring training, really. Actually, even since, would you agree with this, Jake, since the signing?
Yeah, since the trade. Yeah, definitely. I think John was almost to the point where he thought that Mitch Haniger was a better get than Gene Segura, can make an argument for that.
I was going to say that was part of the Segura trade, right, for Taijuan Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Ketel Marte, who's crushing it over in Triple A now.
Love me some PCL, right?
I still think we won that trade, but what was remarkable about Mitch Haniger, so, you know, Jake has kind of addressed the mechanical side of things, but that feeds into him just being a total student of the game, asking to be sent down to single A ball to work on his swing when he wasn't happy with it. The Jerry DePoto raved about him all during spring training, but not just Jerry, like every other coach, every beat writer, every person who was covering spring training, anyone, Mike Blowers, the radio announcer people, TV crew, anytime the question came up, who has been the most impressive this spring training, the answer was always Mitch Haniger. And, you know, you don't want to read too much into spring, but just for him to make that immediate of an impact, and just in listening to him in interviews, he's so smart. He's got such a baseball IQ. He's got a great attitude, great makeup. And, you know, that plus the swing mechanics changes, plus the plate discipline, I mean, it all adds up to me to, yeah, I think Mitch Haniger is for real.
Let's pull back for just a second here. So entering this series, the Twins are 29-24, first place in the Central, and the Mariners are 28-30. When you guys look at the Twins from a distance, what is your perception of them as a club? Let's start with Kate on this one.
What? I'm sorry. I'm kind of surprised to see you guys sitting atop the Central.
True.
You're on top of the Central.
First and Central. I believe by just one game here. Let's pull it up. Yeah, one game over Cleveland, 2.5 over Detroit, 6 over the White Sox, 6.5 over the disappointing Kansas City Royals. But yeah, it does. You know, negative run differential and all that stuff. It does make it feel like it might not be super sustainable. But they do a lot of fun things.
I did watch a Twins game very early in the season. I was like, holy crap, this team is for real. Like, this is a fun team.
They are super fun.
They looked very different. They just looked like they were having a great time out there. Sano really looks like he's come into himself. Mm-hmm. The outfielders were running around having fun with each other. You know, they looked like a happy, competent, functional team, which I think is not something I've always looked at Minnesota and seen.
How about you, Jake? What do you think?
I mean, with the extreme parity in the American League, like really anyone has a shot at the playoffs still. And we're looking at like the wild card standings, and the Mariners are 2.5 games out, and the lowest team, the Royals, the team with the worst record in the American League, is only 5.5 games out of the wild card. So even if the Twins slide a bit in the second half of the season, I think they still got a great shot. They've played really well. They've probably gotten a little lucky with their run differential, but I'm looking at their road record, and their road record is just, it's like the third best in the majors, and that's saying something to play so well on the road. And like Kate was saying, like the Twins, we've heard about all of these prospects like Buxton and Sano and Berrios, like coming up through their system, and none of them have ever been sort of they haven't come into their own, and I think this year we're actually seeing that with Sano and Buxton. I mean, he's had his troubles at the plate, but he's been an amazing center fielder for you guys, and Berrios has looked incredible in the rotation in his three or four starts now.
I think it's five now. Are you guys bummed to not see him? I mean, part of it is like you want to see the best players in the game. Like back in the day, Liriano and Felix had a few really cool battles. But do you also like to kind of miss some of the other team's best pitchers just from the standpoint of, maybe we can steal a couple wins here?
Yeah, I think, I mean, from a fan standpoint, from just a fan of the game, I really would love to see Berrios. And I think we'll get to see him. We have a series next week in Minnesota. I think we'll get to see him there. But from a personal Mariner fan standpoint, I'm glad to miss him this season or this series, because we definitely need those wins. We need to move up in the standings a bit, and I think getting the back end of the Twins rotation is a good thing for the Mariners at this point.
What's it like covering a team that is run by Jerry DePoto? Because that's got to be chaotic.
It's if you quiz the fan base on who's on the 25-man roster today, I guarantee you that 90% of the people couldn't name all 25 guys. And
for sure. you just
really have no idea who's in the bullpen at any point in the season.
Yeah, no, not even our own writers can't keep up with it.
Yeah, that's true.
But part of that is, you know, the injuries, but also covering a team that is run by Jerry DePoto means that you will be at home making a pie on Thanksgiving evening, and your phone will light up all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh, why is Ketel Marte posting that he's a Diamondback? and yeah, then your Thanksgiving evening is kind of wrecked because you have to jump on this breaking news. I was talking about that with some of the Beats last night, and they were like, oh, yeah, it's nuts. Like, do you have no respect for our time?
Do you guys miss Taijuan Walker at all? I mean, I know it's a good trade for you guys, but especially with the paucity of healthy pitchers on this team right now, do you miss him even just a little bit?
The thing about Taijuan Walker is he always had this potential that he sort of never reached his highest potential. He was always like on the cusp. He would always show flashes of that potential that in a game or two every season. But then the rest of the season is sort of like this really frustrating, like, why aren't you pitching the way we know you can pitch? And so it would be nice to have him this year, especially with considering all the rotation issues that we've had. But I really like Gene Segura at shortstop, and Mitch Haniger is a piece for the long term. I think he's going to be a great Mariner for a number of years. And so I think that, I mean, every trade is sort of a give and take. And I think giving away Taijuan for those two pieces, I think it was a good trade for both teams. And I'm happy with our return. I wouldn't go back and redo it if I had the chance.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little bit like Jake said. I mean, in any good trade, nobody wins exactly and nobody loses exactly. It's just a good trade for both teams. And I think that's what this was. Taijuan is closer to home. He's closer to his family. I honestly think that that's important for him, better mm-hmm. for him.
Yep.
He was not, I think, a super great fit for this front office.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they were happy with his work ethic. I think that there were some off-the-field issues that made him... I mean, teams called about Taijuan Walker and James Paxton, and I think it became pretty clear that they were in no way entertaining offers on James Paxton, but they did put Taijuan up to see what they could get for him. And, you know, a lot of that is just the player personnel. So from that standpoint, I don't miss Taijuan Walker, even though I recognize the good he could be doing in this rotation. I don't miss Nate Karns, who was a similar... issue.
We've seen a lot of him.
That's the one bad. I loved Mike Montgomery, so that's the one trade that I kind of look back on and think this one really looks like a stinker in the long run, because he could be helping us out a lot now. And you know, the knock on Montgomery is he's not special, and he's not, you know, he's a long reliever, he's a spot starter, he's a dime a dozen, but he's really not, honestly. Like he will go out there and he will give you good, dependable innings, and the Mariners could really use that this year. So if you want a trade that I regret, that's the one.
How many times has Mike Zunino broken each of your hearts?
At least three times a season.
A season? I was going to guess, like, I was going to set the over-under at like 3.5 total, maybe because you guys had become so prepared for it, or what do you call, like a... disillusioned, but wow,
sure.
Well, per season, that's crazy.
I mean, Mike Zunino, he's sort of, he shows these flashes of like, this is the batter that he could become. He's, I mean, in the last week, like he had that grand slam this weekend against the Rays, and then he followed it up with another great game, a multi-hit game. And so he shows these flashes of brilliance at the plate. And it sort of like rekindles your hopes and dreams about who Mike Zunino could become. And he had a stretch at the end of last year too, where he was sent down to AAA for a while to retool everything again. And he came back a bit and lit the world on fire again. And then sort of kind of cratered towards the end of September. And so it's like this roller coaster ride of, I think I mean, he's so polarizing, and he shows so much potential, and he just can't put it all together at the same time, and
Now, is he required to declare that he's running for his mayorship of Tacoma again, or is he automatically listed as an incumbent? Sorry, that was bad. I'm sorry.
We'll try to delete that one. Sending him down to Tacoma. There's nothing left for him there. Right. I mean, honestly, yeah. He can't. He can beat up on AAA pitching. It is purely, like, from a mental standpoint when they send him down to get a little bit of a break. And I'm hoping that this latest stint was enough for him to be like, hey, I only have to hit a little tiny bit to be better than Tuffy Goswitch, and I can still be valuable. What concerns me about Zunino right now is he's always been an above-average defensive catcher, and his defensive numbers have just fallen off the table this year. I don't know what's going on. It's like the focus on the swing and the plate discipline and just trying really hard to not be a black hole offensively is costing him defensively. What's going on? But if Mike Zunino can't be a good defensive catcher, that really kills his value. So hopefully he can get that part going. It just feels like there's always something with Mike Zunino. Like, it's always something that we have to worry about.
I think so. I mean, you read about, like, Major League Baseball players being head cases a lot of times, and I think more than anyone else in the major leagues, Mike Zunino is a head case. He just sort of gets into this, like, he just overthinks everything. And so sending him down to AAA these last couple of years has sort of been exactly what Kate said. It's sort of like clearing his head and getting back to the fundamentals of his swing. And so I really hope that he sort of, like, matures out of that rhythm of sort of overthinking everything. And maybe his defense is connected to that as well. Like Kate was saying, like, if he's so focused on getting his swing right this year, maybe his defensive chops have sort of been pushed to the back burner. And so he's got to find this balance between being a good catcher, which we know he can be, and a great game manager for the pitching staff, while also contributing with the bat as well. And I don't think we've seen both of those things happen at the same time.
It is hard. Catcher is really freaking hard. If you ask me one position I do not want to play on the baseball field, it is catcher, because it is hard and it is thankless. Mm-hmm. Like, the catcher calls an excellent game and nobody runs out and praises the catcher. The pitcher has to do it. And I think that Zunino has put a lot on his shoulders as far as, I think he feels pressure to be good, and he's felt that pressure to be good, and he's felt the pressure of being the high draft pick who is supposed to, you know, be this impact player, and it's messed him up.
Speaking of Tacoma, what do you guys make? David El Russo wants to know if you're concerned about Tyler O'Neill's poor AAA performance to this point.
No, because he's super young for the level.
Yeah, 4.3 years too young, or younger than the average, according to Baseball Reference. That's impressive.
Yeah, I understand why they didn't send him back to AA. There's nothing more for Tyler O'Neill to do against AA pitching, because they just don't throw enough breaking stuff. And that's his trouble, and that's why he's struggling in Tacoma. He's struggling to hit breaking balls, and he's seeing a lot of them, and he's seeing stuff from MLB veterans, and the stuff that worked for him in Jackson isn't going to work in Tacoma, and he's learning that, and he's figuring it out, and it's the first time in his baseball career he's ever really struggled. You know, we're talking about a kid who was, like, Team Canada when he was basically in high school. He's a gold medalist. He's only known success. And now all of a sudden he finds himself batting seventh in Tacoma's lineup. And honestly, I think it's good for him. I think it's good for him to have these struggles. I think it's good to force him to be intellectual about why he's struggling and what he needs to do to get better, and for him to construct a plan to work on that. I'm not privy to what exactly they're telling him in Tacoma, but I do see, like, him trying to take better at-bats there,
him trying to work against his natural aggressiveness and just swing at everything that looks slow and like he can hit it a million miles in those PCL ballparks, which are launching pads. So I'm not worried about Tyler O'Neill. No one else should be worried about Tyler O'Neill. Tyler O'Neill shouldn't be worried about Tyler O'Neill.
What kind of a joy is it to watch Robinson Cano play baseball every day?
If I had a kid who I was teaching how to play baseball, I would show him footage of Robinson Cano because he makes the game look like it's playing at like one quarter speed. Like he's so smooth. He's so confident on the field. He knows. He has such an awareness of his body and the field at large he makes the game look amazing. Like, yeah, he's so fun to watch.
He also is an amazing teammate. Like, when Valencia came and he was struggling, Robinson Cano was like, hey, you know, don't get mad. Don't smile. Have fun. We're playing baseball. And they really, and that's why partially I think Valencia is a good fit for Seattle, because it's a laid back clubhouse. It's not a very gizmo centered clubhouse. Cause everything flows through Cano, and Cano dictates the energy of that locker room. And he makes everyone better, not just by his play on the field, but also because he is a great teammate. He's somebody who will lift guys up when they're feeling down. He will help a guy out. And it was actually kind of telling when Brad Miller was it when he was batting leadoff, Jake?
That's right.
He was having those struggles. And Cano tried to talk to him. And I guess Miller must have ratted him out to Andy Van Slyke, the third base coach. And Slyke approached him and was like, oh, no, that's not really your job. Like, that's Robinson Cano. If Robinson Cano wanted to tell me how to tie my shoe, I would listen to Robinson Cano.
That's right. And that's why Andy Van Slyke's no longer with the organization, right?
Nor is Brad Miller. So,
so Felix on the shelf right now, last year a bit of a tough season in his age 30 season. Is he, in your estimation, kind of on that Joe Mauer path where he's not as great as he used to be, but hopefully can at least be decent to retain some of his value? Or do you guys still have hope that he can get back on track? Because I have a theory, and you guys can tell me if you think it's dumb or not, but when young flamethrowers come up, whether it's Tim Lincecum or whatever, they hit this certain wall where their stuff kind of goes from 95 to 90 to 90, 91, and then they mm-hmm. have to kind of leap the hurdle to the next step to become that great pitcher. And I feel like Felix has that mental capability. There's really nothing on the mound he can't do as long as his stuff is good enough. So I feel like there's still plenty left in the tank if he can get healthy again. But there's been pitchers that haven't been able to leap that hurdle. Tim Lincecum is very clearly one. But then you will have guys who turn that corner and then they pitch well into their mid-30s. And I know the game would be better for Felix. The game would be better for the fact that Felix is in it for many more years. Where do you guys stand on what his future looks like, and how murky is it based on where he's at health-wise?
Yeah, I think with Felix, you think about coming up as a really young, like 22 years old, and he's sort of his first experience with failure was last year, and I think it really shook him. It really it changed his outlook. It rocked him to his core. And I think, like you were saying, he's coming to that point where he doesn't have the stuff to blow by batters anymore. His velocity, we've talked about it for years, his velocity is dropping. And so he's at the point in his career where he needs to sort of turn into a pitcher who knows how to pitch. And he knows the scouting reports, and he knows the tendencies of each batter that he's facing. And he can use his amazing changeup and his great curveball to get outs rather than just using his stuff to get outs. Right. And I think we saw that earlier this year when he was on the mound. His walk rate was dropping all the way. He gave up like two walks in five starts, and his K rate was back up to where we like to see it. And then he just got that shoulder injury, and that really sucked because it looked like he had sort of made those adjustments to get back to a point where he could be a really valuable member of the rotation. So that shoulder injury, it's a little scary because we didn't really hear exactly what was wrong. It was described as shoulder inflammation, and so there might be structural damage, there might not be, and he's starting his rehab assignment, but it's sort of that injury throws his future in question because it could become a recurring thing. It might not, but there's always that question in the back of your mind now.
Anything to add to that, Kate?
I think that it gets back to that question. And Jake did such a wonderful job covering everything. Sort of this recurring theme here that early success is great. Sometimes you don't learn lessons, though, through not having faced adversity. And like Jake said, he has been a thrower, and now he has to be a pitcher. He has to really be able to nail his spots. He has to make smart decisions. And it's sort of an identity crisis because he's got this, he's the king. He is the king. And then people started to question, is he still the king? And you know that he saw the article title. There have been such a rash of articles about it over the past year, couple years. So I think that's a struggle for him. It's got him questioning his identity and his future, and he's trying to push forward. But I think that, like Jake said, this was a real wake-up to him this year that, I have to work on my body because his workout program has not always been described as what I would call rigorous for his off-season program. And he started this year, which is great, but you're not going to see the results from working out hard one off-season. You're not going to come back. It takes years. You have to start preparing for 30 at 27. Is that Ibanez who said that? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, and we all joked about Ibanez. We joked that he, slept in a hyperbaric chamber that he was part Dracula that guy was just, yeah. I don't know how Raul Ibanez, he still looks young to me.
Chiseled and grizzled.
Yeah, so I think that Felix has been slow to adopt that. He's been slow to come to that. And I'm not sure what the rest of this year is going to look like. He's really got to change everything about himself. He has to change his approach. He has to change his mindset when he's on the mound. He has to change his pitch selection. He has to change his location. And he has to change his body. And that's a huge order for somebody who is already a pretty well-established major league pitcher. So I still think Felix is going to be useful and valuable. But I think we're going to see, as we saw last year, and I predict we see the rest of this year, a struggle for him.
How big of a drag is this Gene Segura injury? I was watching the game, and actually he and Nelson Cruz were both removed from the same game. I believe the lefty, whose name is escaping me, was pitching for the Rockies that day. Kyle Freeland. And
that's right.
He hit Cruz on the hand with a pitch. Cruz stayed in but ended up leaving. And then the really ugly hammy injury. What's your level of concern with what this does for the season for the Mariners, considering it could be a very long-term injury?
Yeah, I think
says it all, I think.
It really sucks. I mean, Gene Segura was having an all-star season. He was among the leaders in batting average this year. And he was fun to watch, right? He was one of these guys that has a lot of joy when he plays the game. And he was a critical member of the team. And so to go from Gene Segura at starting shortstop to Taylor Motter as starting shortstop. And I know Taylor Motter had a great
what the heck
start
to
the year. But he stood. He's tailed off after that great start, and I mean, he had a nice grand slam over the weekend against the Rays. But it's a huge drop off in talent level, and we're all hoping. So the team line, as far as what they've communicated about Segura's injury, is sort of a nebulous month to 2 months, and that could be a month is okay. We can survive that, but 2 months that's a long time. That takes us all the way up to the trade deadline and.
Decision time, yeah, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
Meanwhile, Segura is saying 4 to 6 weeks. I'll be back out. It doesn't hurt.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how much I trust his own diagnosis of his ankle injury, but I think with Nelson Cruz, he was removed for that game, but he came back the very next game and he was slotted into the lineup without any issue, and he's been on a tear. Ever
Freeland
since, he has bones of steel.
Freeland's fastball what? About steel beams?
Can't melt steel beams.
That's a good take. I like that.
I'm pretty sure that Nelson Cruz's whole skeleton is made of, what is Wolverine's made of? Adamantium.
Adamantium, that's right.
he's just, I very nuttily predicted Nelson Cruz to be like a 4 or 5 win player this season. I was like, yeah, he can do that. He can get to 5 wins. So I just thought he was going to knock the stuffing out of the ball after all the off-season work that he did. I didn't see any kind of age-related regression for him because I think he's just built his body into being a giant barrel-chested power hitter, and he is such a good pure hitter, too. He's still hitting for average is the thing. He's not just selling out for power. Nelson Cruz is still hitting singles and doubles. I would love for him to take it a little easier on the base paths, but there's a good example of a player who is really smart about his body and aging and what you need to do in order to stave off. He's been on this hardcore off-season training regimen for 3 years. So you're still seeing the benefits of that.
Well, guys, I could keep you all day, and I would like to do that, but it is a little wild. The Twins and Mariners are going to play all their games in the span of, I think, 10 days for the season.
It's nuts. That's nuts.
Yeah, they'll be here next week when we have to get back on the beat. But I do want to close with this, and maybe we'll have one follow-up. Who has the best hair on this Mariners team? And I know what the answer is. But I feel like some people might say Taylor Motter. I don't think that's the right answer, but I think it's in consideration. Who has the best hair on the Mariners? It's Ben Gamel, right? I mean, it has to be Ben Gamel.
No.
What?
No, because here's the thing about Ben Gamel.
He has
the flow, but he's got the weird like goatee thing going on.
It doesn't have facial feng shui, so to speak.
Yeah.
No, it's untamed, too. Like, he just looks like he has come out of a cave in the woods somewhere.
Wait. What's wrong with that? We had a baby 3 weeks ago. I don't think I've shaved since, so I'm looking the same right now, which is crazy. It's wonderful to be a father, but, yeah, she's not happy, the little one, when I give her a kiss and she wakes up. So she is wonderful. If you see her, see my pictures on Twitter, you'll melt. So it's not him. Is it the weird rat's nest on Giovanni Gallardo's head? Is it Taylor Motter? What is it? I mean, who is it? I must be missing somebody because, again, like you said, I'd probably fail a Sporkle quiz of the 25 men on the active roster right now. Who has the best hair?
It might. So here's a dark horse. So Edwin Diaz pitched for the Puerto Rico WBC team, and they all dyed their hair the beach blonde.
Yeah, didn't Hector? I think Hector Santiago was on that team.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and I think he kept it around for – I don't know if he still has it this far into the season, but he kept
it
around for a while. That was I liked that look. That was fun.
It was kind of badass. Like, it was just like a big yellow skunk stripe
yeah.
in the middle of his head.
It takes guts.
And it was – I mean, it's a testament to how cool Edwin Diaz is that he can pull it off. I'm going to go – actually, I don't like the long hair look. I think it is – sloppy. Taylor Motter definitely has the better hair between Motter and Gamel because Taylor Motter has like a luscious golden mane that even when it's wet doesn't look too disgusting.
This is down goes Frazier for me. This is an upset. I thought you guys were going to be Ben Gamel all day.
No,
oh, no
but
way.
I like Danny Valencia's hair. Like Danny Valencia is a very handsome man and he has just a
He
nice...
knows it though. He knows it. Believe me, he knows it.
He definitely knows it. And I don't, you know, I'm not mad about it, though. I'm not mad about it. Go on with your selfies, Danny. That's fine.
Go on with your dirty selfie.
But yeah, he's just got like a nice, I like a nice amount of flow. Like, not too much, not too little, just a little messy. Not, I'm not talking like Bryce Harper or anything. Not to where it's like its own entity or has its own Twitter account or anything. I don't like hair that calls attention to itself.
Yeah, Bryce Harper is like a lion, like in pretty much every respect, yeah. Down to the mane. So I thought for sure it was going to be Ben Gamble, because then I was going to ask you how well he's playing. Can he play center when Haniger comes back? Are you looking at Heredia, Haniger, Gamble for your outfield, or what's the plan there? Because Dyson hasn't been very good.
No, Dyson hasn't been. I mean, he's been a great defensive center fielder. He's basically built all of his value on his defensive chops. Yeah, that's a great question.
Running. Yeah, stealing bases. Was he 14 for? I had it up here. 14 for 17 in stolen bases. Yeah, I mean that's pretty impressive. That's a pretty good rate.
I think it'll just be a mix and match based on who has the hot hand and what the pitching matchup is. I think all four of them could probably play center field if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely Haniger will be an everyday guy, and then sort of we'll just mix and match in center and left based on, yeah, who has the hot hand.
Heredia is the second best defensive. I think he's actually ahead of Dyson now in defensive runs saved. So
yeah, that's true.
I wouldn't mind seeing him out there. And dark horse Boog Powell. Boog is doing fine. Well, he's taking his walks. He's making great catches. I am not sold on Gamble defensively, mm-hmm. because he makes these plays that look amazing, but because he's taken terrible routes to get to the ball. So he makes things look really flashy, but I don't know. I remain unsold on Ben Gamble.
Well, guys, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know you're going to be sick of the Twins here in the next 7 to 10 days. It might be because you see a lot of them. It might be because they play well. We'll see. But thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. From Lookout Landing, Kate Prusser, did I say that right?
Yes.
And Jake Mailhot, at Jake, MAILHOT on Twitter, and at @NCE, again, @2Zelda on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, and congratulations on your little one.
Thank you so much. For producer Tom Schrar, I'm Brandon Warren. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.